Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Well, good Thursday there, football fans. James Sharman here, alongside John Molinaro. It's the Soccer Central Podcast. Quite the week in football. We'll get to the Champions League story in a little while, but more domestically speaking, Jamo, we have a scandal brewing in Montreal.
Yeah.
At least we'll try and create a scandal. If there isn't one there, we'll just embellish and assume there is one regarding Mr. Didier Drogba, who was absent for the Toronto FC match on the weekend. He was not selected to start the game, threw a strop, refused to go with the team and sit on the bench. Now, apparently it's been resolved. The coach Biello and the owner Saputo have spoken to him. They say it's water under the bridge. Do you believe that, J-Mo?
I think he's played his last game for Montreal.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe he plays in the playoff game, but I think he's done after the season. I think this is kind of, I mean, I kind of doubted whether he would go on anyway, but just because of his age and because of what happened at the start of the season, you know, it seemed like he was bound to retire and go to Chelsea. But I do think this is it. This is, I don't see how they can kind of go on from this after the stunt that he pulled on the weekend.
Well, let's go to Montreal now, and the man very close to the scene, our very own Lloyd Barker. Hey, Lloyd.
What's up, boys?
Well, not Drogba's number on the team sheet, that's for sure. Is this a scandal? Obviously, it's been, doused somewhat by the club as they would. They're dealing with it, I guess, the right way, saying it's no big deal now, we're fine. He'll play whatever role the coach decides. But close to the team, is this a huge deal, what happened last weekend?
Oh, for sure. Definitely is, because on the one hand, you've got a player who you brought here to sell out the stadium, which he's successfully done. You've got a player you brought here to score goals, which he's successfully done that, to improve the international, I guess, perception of the club, which there's no question he's done that. But on the one hand, that's one thing. But then on the other hand, that same person who's building all of that inevitably has the power to undo it all. So this action that Didier Drogba took and the decision that he made to pull himself from the team sheet against Toronto is one of those signs. I mean, what the message that this sends to players abroad, assuming it doesn't go unpunished, which of course it has, but the message was at that time that you just come here and do whatever the heck you want, which obviously that's not the case, and that can't be the case. And as the league grows and bigger names continue to arrive, I mean, you've got to take a position where these things just can't happen. So, yeah, this is certainly a dramatic story. It is a scandal in a way. Obviously, no one got hurt, and there's no sex tape. So that's a good thing.
The year is still young.
But the year is still young. But, you know, the one thing this did for me was bring back preseason. And, John, you just mentioned Chelsea.
Right.
And you can't get away from the fact that he held up the team for the longest while in the off season. He was the talk for months, unnecessarily and unfairly and in a big distractive way, for that matter. And that's at the beginning of the year. Now we're at the end of the year, and it's the same thing. It's just poor timing on both aspects. And he's at the heart of it.
Lloyd, what does this mean for, I mean, you're a former player. I mean, if you're in that locker room, if you're a teammate of his and he pulls this, you know, for lack of a better word, stunt where he learns that he's not going to be in the starting 11, then he tells Biello, well, then, you know, I'm not going to show up. I mean, what does that do what kind of message does that send for his teammates? Like, how do they deal with that? What must they be thinking?
That's kind of the angle I take with that, John, because, I think back and look, I was fortunate enough throughout my 15-year career to be considered a regular starter. But certainly I didn't start every game, and when I wasn't named in the starting lineup, I wasn't jumping for joy. I was unhappy, and I didn't like the decision. However, in all likelihood, I would have accepted the decision and sat on the bench, and I would try to support my teammates. But you know what? Even if I wanted to pout, that's fair enough as well, because it means you're unhappy. But you make sure you're sitting on the bench and you're ready to come on and contribute in any way. Because at the end of the day, players are never happy to sit on a bench. But no one would fathom the idea to take themselves out of the team if they are healthy to play in the match, which he's done. And so players will know that because it's, again, it's not unusual for an unhappy player to be sitting on a bench. In all likelihood, the seven players on the bench, there's about four or five of them that are fuming mad to be sitting right where they are. A couple guys will obviously understand the situation, probably younger players, whatnot. But most guys just know that you don't pull yourself out of the team. So I look at it like when he did that, he's basically telling his teammates, you guys are on your own, and I'm not helping you today, and whatever happens, happens. That is a terrible message and made worse when you consider the magnitude of the match, made worse when you consider the competition, meaning the opposition, that being the team's biggest rival, made worse that it was at home. And I think in his mind, that's precisely what he wanted. He wanted to play this big match against this big team, against the rival, at home, et cetera, and all of that. But then since he wasn't going to be starting, he decided to take himself out of the team. But then all of a sudden, all those scenarios that he would have wanted to be a part of is now the reason he took himself out, and it's made the matter that much worse. What? And so for the teammate, I would look at him like, I lost a little bit of respect for you, Didier, and you know what? You can apologize all you want, but I feel like he just kind of exposed himself there.
Right.
It's a mistake, but he just kind of exposed himself there in a way that maybe we didn't want to see. And he goes down as one of the big players in locker rooms, very respected and all of that, and a great teammate, but maybe he's not the great teammate that we've all been led to believe that he is. And I think that's the message for the teammates.
Well, Lloyd, what did you make of Biello's decision to drop him in the first place? I mean, sort of to go
it's
with...
It's a no-brainer, John.
Yeah? So you're it's okay with him going with Mateo Mancuso up front?
It's a no-brainer. And to the point where, I mean, Didier Drogba should have understood that. To the point where on another part of the discussion, maybe Mara Biello should have been able to convince Didier Drogba of that. Because that's part of a manager's job. It's tough decisions, but you've got to let a player understand as well. And even if he disagrees, that being Didier Drogba, he will at least understand by your reasoning. And so, of course, I'm not trying to say Biello is at fault here, by no means, for Didier Drogba's actions, that is. But I tend to believe, on a side note, that this thing, because the decision was made on Saturday he wasn't going to play, this thing probably could have been sorted out within 24 hours of the game for this to not come to head and all of this. Now we're having to talk about it, you know, days later. But I think it's a no-brainer. Drogba and the team, he started 18 games this season. They've won three of those. Okay? And when he comes off the bench, that's 15 games, and they've won eight of those and lost only three. The numbers don't lie. Numbers, yes, can be misleading, but they never lie. And these numbers do not speak in Drogba's behalf. Now, in saying that, I must say, it's not all Drogba's fault that these numbers pan out the way they have. Because the team defensively has been poor all season. They get it together today, and then for four games, they're a mess. They've created tons of chances, etc. But as it relates specifically to Drogba, these numbers, that is, when Drogba's on the field, the team doesn't play the way they should. They try to force passes into him that are not the right passes. And I'll give you an example. You look at Ignacio Piatti's first goal, the wonder goal that he stuck in the far corner. That came off the second phase of a Montreal Impact corner, which is half cleared and fell to Donadel, who's about 35, 40 meters out. Right? His first instinct throughout the entire match against Toronto FC, Marco Donadel, that is, that plays central midfield, was to play nearly every ball to Ignacio Piatti, including that ball that was clear that came to him on this corner for his first goal. Without even thinking, he played it wide to Piatti, who took a great first touch and then did the business from there. If Drogba is on the field, I won't say I guarantee Ignacio doesn't get that ball, but there's a highly unlikeliness that Piatti gets that ball because Drogba would have been closer to Donadel. He would have been more central, and he would have been screaming for that ball. And Donadel likely would have played that ball with his back to goal, He would have tried some kind of a combination in the middle of the field, and Ignacio Piatti would be left standing alone on the far side, and nothing would have come of it. That's an example of how the team plays when Drogba's on the field. And I mentioned Piatti, and it's no coincidence that he scores two goals as well, because Piatti is a far more effective player when Drogba's not on the field, because he gets more involved, A, by his own initiative, and B, by the team's reaction to Drogba not being there, making Piatti the main source of attack, the primary angle of attack when Drogba's not on the field, which it should be even when Drogba is on the field. So, again, just to kind of sum all of that up, when Drogba's on the pitch, it's not all his fault. Sometimes I think it's his legendary status that lets these guys try to do force things into him when those aren't the right passes.
So this team's obviously, as you mentioned there, better off without him on the field right now. And that's with no disrespect to what the guy's accomplished in his career. These are now the money games. One game left in the regular season, then the playoffs. It's really important. Do you think this story's now gone away? Or would you be surprised if it rears its ugly head once again? I mean, if you're the club at this point, why do you even keep him around?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you drop them now, I mean, they find them and all of that. They've had a big discussion. I don't think it's gone away, because you've got a game on Sunday that's, you know, very, very important. In a way, it's good that it's on turf, because we know that Drogba has clearly tried to stay away from turf. So if Biello benches him, at least it looks okay, like everyone understood, just like in Orlando, if he doesn't start. I mean, so in a way, that kind of helps the situation. But then you got to figure, at what point do you bring him on? And then you got to figure, you know, how do you deal with Mancosu, who is the player here that's in some ways suffering because of this whole drama with Didier Drogba? Because I've always felt, and take it to another level here, you know, when Didier Drogba pulled that stunt, in a way, he's saying something to Ignacio Matteo Mancosu that I think is slightly disrespectful. It's a knock on the player who's taken his spot, and he's taken his spot for good reason, and he's earned at that spot over Drogba at this stage. And so that's a knock on him. It's almost like a player when he gets subbed off and he's pouting, he's kicking, and he's ranting. But what does that say to the player coming on? Yeah, so I've never believed in kind of that attitude to have. And so this hasn't ended, because there is still games to play and there's still decisions to be made. And you know, when he's sitting on the bench next game, he's going to be unhappy. And so, you know, everyone's going to be watching him. No one's going to be watching the team. And you just wonder what effect this will have on the players on the pitch, knowing that this guy sitting on the bench, unhappy, with every ticking minute that he doesn't come on the field, he's growing more and more irate to not being on the field. Because, I mean, they could talk all they want about this being hashed and all of that, and the meeting, and he's going to do the role that the manager has said and all that, but it won't change the attitude.
It's a real shame, isn't it, Lloyd? I mean, let's be honest. When he arrived last year, great fanfare, you know, this one of the biggest names to ever play in MLS, was superb last season. 10 or 11 goals in as many games, just brilliant. But then the Chelsea rumour begins in the off-season, the whole turf issue, and now this. This could have been a wonderful story for Montreal over the course of his contract. Looking back, you know, let's assume he leaves end of this season. I think we can all agree he's leaving. What will be his legacy, do you think, in Montreal?
You know what, I think he's achieved everything that they've asked him to. And everything he's been brought in to do, he has done. I just think it's going to be a real learning experience for the club going forward in terms of the player that they bring in, as they seek to bring in top DPs and all of that, and, you know, pragmatic DPs and international name DPs kind of thing. You know, you look at Marco De Valle, Ignacio Piatti is a DP. I mean, he just goes about his business. You know, he's not trying to be a diva. He just does his thing, and he's a wonderful player. But I think this is a learning experience for the club. And you're right; it's a shame kind of how this has happened. But you know, I think the thing in preseason with Chelsea, I didn't like the way he handled it. But I said clearly then that I couldn't blame him for having second thoughts about continuing his career or having second thoughts about returning to Chelsea, because the scenario as it presented itself was great for him. And I think most players would understand that, even the club would understand that. Obviously, the fact that he just signed a contract with the Impact and he had another full year and they're relying on him, not enough time to find another DP. Of course, all that played into it. But from Didier Drogba's side, the whole thing with Chelsea in the preseason, I could at least understand what he was tied up about kind of mentally and as the decisions were to be made going down the stretch. So I could forgive him for that. But this one here, wow, this is tough. I mean, obviously we live and forgive, but this one at the end is a tough one because the timing is poor, just like it was in preseason, and the act is extremely selfish, which, I mean, there was some resemblance of that situation in preseason, but again, you could understand that. This is just selfish. This is all about Drogba. The act that he pulled is unprecedented. I had never seen that before. I had never heard of that happening before in all my years in the game, and it's a bad time. And it comes from a man who was brought here to, you know, fill the stadium, to score goals, sell some jerseys and all of that, which he has done. But again, just, you know, in many ways, it's a message. It takes, you know, there's a saying, actually, it's years to build a reputation and just, you know, seconds to undo it. And I think that's kind of what's going to happen. But I think overall, he's achieved what he's been brought in to do, but this leaves a bad mark going out, basically.
You wait, though, when he scores the winning goal in the MLS Cup final. We'll say, all is forgiven, Didier.
Wouldn't he, though? Wouldn't
we know he? It would be very Didier Drogba-ish, wouldn't it?
No kidding. This is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately business. Yeah. Anyone in our game knows that, and no one will have known that more than Didier Drogba. He sat on a bench in his final year in Chelsea, and I'm sure he pouted, but he wanted to play more. In fact, he stated that. And there's no difference here. It's MLS, yes. It's not the BPL. But it's still the same. It's still the same setup, and it's still the same scenario where your play has diminished, and there are others that offer more. He has to understand that.
No, 100%. Lloyd, thanks so much, this mate. We'll chat to you at some point, I'm sure, in the playoffs. Enjoy the games, and enjoy watching Didier pouting on the bench.
Will do, lads. You guys take care.
Cheers, Lloyd.
That's Lloyd Barker. Follow Lloyd on Twitter, at LloydBarker11. It is a shame, isn't it, J-Mo? Because, you know, listen, we've watched this guy play for, what, decade? 15 years, maybe.
Yeah.
A long time.
I remember.
What he's accomplished. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I remember, like, first watching him in Ligue 1 before he moved to Chelsea when he was with
Marseille.
Yeah. Before that, he was with another club who, I think, whose name I can't remember, but you could tell he was something special. So, yeah.
At the same time, he's always been a diva-ish footballer on the field.
Sure.
He's done some great things off the field, but on the field, a very diva-ish footballer. Yeah. And I can't say I'm that surprised.
No.
Sadly, I think Montreal's probably handling it the right way right now.
Yeah.
Just deal with it in-house. Don't say too much aside from it's being dealt with. They're on the same page. There's no battle between the veteran player and the coach.
Mm.
As Joe Saputo said, that's not the case. Maybe it is the case, but you don't make that public.
Right.
If it is the case, because these are important games.
Absolutely.
How far do you think Montreal can go in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, look, I think it's MLS, and I know that sounds like a cliche, but anything can happen. It really can. So they're certainly trending right at the correct moment because they're unbeaten in three games with two wins. It was a credible draw on the weekend. I was there at Stade Saputo and watched it unfold. And, you know, you can make an argument that Montreal maybe was slightly the better side and deserved to win. But Toronto sort of, was fair play to them. They earned the draw, and I don't think it was an terribly fair result. But, yeah, I think like Ignacio Piatti and sort of Lloyd mentioned it, he is a fantastic player. I mean, this guy, I'm not sure why he's not getting more MLS MVP talk around him, but he's sensational. I mean, he is just a massive difference maker for them. And he's a class above any other player that Montreal has. And just a wonderful playmaker. So, I think there's every chance that Montreal could at least duplicate what they did last year and, you know, win the first round and really make a go of it in the conference semifinals.
There seems to be a nice relationship between Italian soccer and MLS these days, huh? Like their players
well,
seem
Montreal,
to make a big
anyway,
difference.
Yeah.
On Giovinco, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
They definitely make that jump to MLS a lot easier than perhaps other players from other countries. It seems that way.
Right.
Top quality players. On that note, what's the latest on Giovinco and his health?
Played well. Played the full 90 minutes on Sunday. Played well. Hit the woodwork with a free kick one time. Had a hand.
As good as he had prior to the injury?
Well, pretty close. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, he hadn't played since late August. So there was, you could tell there was a little rust in there, but not much. It seemed like he was his old lively self. Had a hand in setting up one of the goals. And yeah, so I think provided he didn't have sort of an injury setback in that or in training this week, and I don't think he has, then he should be good to go going forward.
Maybe now with the Jays crashing out of the postseason, TFC might begin to get some press.
Maybe.
Kind of disappeared for the last few weeks.
Maybe, although a certain Mr. Matthews might continue to overshadow them.
Perhaps. But he's probably right, actually. And what a player he is.
Yeah.
What a player. You're saying that. I can't believe you actually mentioned some hockey there. Well
done. I like hockey.
I know you don't dislike it per se, but I'm just happy to see you mentioning Austin Matthews with a smile on your face.
Oh,
you're just gleaming because of the Jays ouster last night.
That too. But you know what? Good for the Leafs and good for him. It seems like everyone I've talked to who has talked to him say he's, you know, a pretty upstanding young guy. And he's going to be in the star in this league. And God knows the Leafs could use that. So, I mean,
well, his interviews are mind-numbingly boring.
Boring,
so he's perfect
yeah.
for this environment.
There actually. You go.
He really is. All right, J-Mo, Champions League this week. I guess the one that stands out, there's some pretty high scores actually in this one.
There was.
But Barcelona crushing Man City 4-0.
Yeah.
And Claudio Bravo's, can we call it a nightmare start to his Man City tenure just yet? Or is that a stretch?
I think that's a bit of a stretch. It hasn't been ideal.
They haven't been good dreams.
No, it hasn't been ideal.
No.
But I wouldn't call it nightmarish.
It's not far off, though, is it? Since he arrived, man, they started struggling. Before that, they couldn't
win. I don't know that they've, like, the struggles are down to him, though.
I'm putting it all down on him.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
He got a red card, remember, against Barcelona, and then they took over.
Right.
Right, so it's all his fault.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it crisis time for Pep Guardiola?
No.
We're going to start using that word a lot more, by the way, on the shows on Saturday.
All right.
A little segment I'm going to try and weave into the show at some point every single week. This week's Crisis Club, because I love using that term.
Right.
It's used way too much.
Yeah, it's too much. I mean, and you know, the crisis at Man United, because they haven't won in 5 games or something like that. And Paul Pogba isn't playing up to standard. Like, it's...
What is the earliest point in the year that you can start using the word crisis?
I think anything before... Well, it depends on the club. It depends on the situation. I mean, if we're talking...
levels of crisis, right?
Yeah, sure.
If you're lower half club
yeah.
and your manager's on the brink, it's crisis.
Right. I mean, if we're talking about... we'll take the example for Chelsea last year where they were really struggling and it kind of became clear by December that they probably weren't going to finish top four. Then, and they ended up making the move to fire Mourinho, if I'm remembering it correctly, in December. At that point, I think you could probably say, considering it's Chelsea and what you expect from them and the talent that they have and that they were the reigning champions, I think it was probably fair to say that they were in crisis at the time. But generally speaking, I mean, we're on what, match day 9 here?
I know.
No teams are in crisis yet.
Yeah, some teams are firing their managers already, though, right? Swansea fired Gwidley, and were they in crisis?
I don't think so, no. They were certainly trending negatively at the time, but I wouldn't say it's crisis.
Just had their opportunity to get Bob Bradley.
Right.
And the owners wanted an American there.
Sure.
What do you make of that hire?
Great. I think it's fantastic. Good for Bob Bradley. You know, I think it's long overdue that he gets his chance. And, you know, I'm hoping that it's a sort of glass ceiling breaking moment where it might lead to other... North Americans, not just Americans, but Canadians will get opportunities to coach in English football, be it in the Premier League or the lower divisions. I think it's great.
Well, hell, English players and coaches don't get a chance. So let's open
well, there
up
you
to
go.
The rest of the world, shall we?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I like his comments, actually, Bob Bradley, when he says, no, I'm not an American coach, I'm a football coach.
Yeah. And
true, but trouble is your owners are American, so you can join the dots here.
Right.
It didn't hurt you, the fact that you're American.
I don't think it hurt, but I mean, did they say we're going to go out and we want an American coach? I don't think it was that. I think they just saw that, you know, he had potential and that he had been, you know, done some pretty good things with, you know, the Egyptian national team, the team in Norway that he coached, the team in France that he coached in the second division. And that he was exactly what they needed, right? So I think it's a smart hire.
Well, some people are criticizing it, saying he's not the best man available, but that doesn't mean his passport is that important. I mean, we see right. we see hires throughout the season and the off season, men that haven't done that much in their career,
right,
from Spain or Italy or England, and we don't question them. Oh, well, that's just because of their passport.
Right.
So it's almost like he's a soft target because he's American.
Yeah,
and I'm with you. I hope he does well. I really do.
Yeah,
I don't think his success or failure is going to be dependent on, you know, or be a factor in the future hires of North American coaches. I think that's nonsense.
Maybe, but you don't think if he does well, because I don't know. I get the sense that there's this, you know, English football very much still looks at American soccer with the jaundiced sort of eye.
Absolutely, yeah.
And a mistrust in that. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, I didn't follow what was going on in the English press when Bradley got hired. I'm sure there was some complimentary stuff, but I'm sure there was some nationalistic.
The American angle was a huge angle for them.
Absolutely. I'm sure there was like, what, this guy from the States is going to come over and like coach one of our teams? Like, come on, give me a break. So, I mean, if he does well, that might help lead. Maybe I'm being completely naive here. So maybe it lessens that sort of
I agree with that. I think it would, but I don't think him, if he fails, for example, that will affect the next American guy with an opportunity. I just don't. Well, look, it didn't work out for Bradley.
You don't think so?
I don't think
maybe.
So.
Maybe. I don't know. So. We'll see.
I'll just have the people there if you're comfortable with, you know, and be the American or otherwise. So I know. We'll see. We'll see. This weekend, Arsenal-Middlesbrough will be on Sportsnet. We have that one.
Yeah.
We're going to do a segment on Theo Walcott. He's had a good start to the season from a goal production standpoint.
Yep.
Once again, he's a winger, by the way. He's not a centre forward. He's a winger this season. He's scoring goals, but he's also missing a lot. The big question will be revolved around this. What are your thoughts on Theo Walcott, Jamie? You've watched and followed this team for many, many years. And when they signed Theo Walcott, he was this prodigy, this young player, did really well at Southampton. Has he reached even close to the heights you thought he was going to when they first signed him? 10 years ago now, can you believe that?
God, has it been that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
27 now.
Wow, that's staggering. Has he reached the heights? No, I don't think so. I mean, you got to remember, there was a lot of hype when he first signed, you know? Like, this was the next Michael Owen. This was sort of the next great, you know, standard bearer of English football.
Speedy, I don't think it's English winger.
Yeah, where we've seen those before. And it didn't quite come to pass. I mean, look, I think on his day, he's a very talented player and he's a dangerous goal scorer. And he's certainly in a dangerous run of form right now. But, you know, whether it's been injuries or just a general lack of consistency, that has kind of held back his career. So I'd like to see, it seems like I said, he's in a very good run of form right now. So I'd like to see more of this and for him to be consistent.
Is he a star player in your mind?
A star player?
You within the league?
Well, I mean, in terms of name value, sure. I mean, you know, is he a player that is a star player in terms of what he produces on the field on a consistent basis? I would have an hard time making that argument. Just because I said, I don't think he's been terribly consistent over the years.
Well, here's a big question you'll be putting up on the website at some point today or tomorrow.
It's up right now.
It's up now, is it? Okay, yeah. It's up now. Well, here it is. It's how would you classify Theo Walcott's squad status at Arsenal? Is he a key player, a rotation player, a super sub, or transfer fodder?
I think he's a cross between a rotation player and what was the other one?
A key player or super sub.
I think he's a cross between a rotation player and a key player.
Ready?
Yeah, I think so. Because he can be a key player at times. He really can.
For sure.
But, it goes back to the consistency for me. I don't think he's shown anything in terms of consistent form for any lengthy stretch of period of time during his time in the Premier League.
Yeah, I agree with you, I think, there. And let us know, people. Get onto sportsnet.ca/soccer. Vote. Give us some comments either on the site or on Twitter, and I'll discuss that with Danny Dicchio and Craig Forrest on Saturday's broadcast. Liverpool play West Brom in the late one. Coming off, of course, that 0-0 with Manchester United where Jose Mourinho...
Man, that was exciting.
Oh, my God. I'm not surprised, in fairness.
No,
Jose is what he does against bigger teams on the road, right? We saw it last time out and the time before with Chelsea and with Porto and Inter Milan.
Man, it was dire to watch.
I guess you understand what he's doing.
Sure.
That was a big game for Jose Mourinho,
yeah.
I thought. He couldn't afford to lose that game. And as much as the United fans probably weren't happy with the way they played, it's not the United fashion way, but he got a point at Anfield. It's not bad, but it does seem a far remove removed from when, you know, United would go to their big rivals and go at them.
Yeah.
And assert themselves and show that swagger. That early season swagger of United seems gone right now. There's a lot of identity issues there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not calling them the crisis club just yet.
Right. Good. I agree.
But I can see how it could evolve that way at some point. It is still early, but from what you've seen from so far from United, this weekend they take on, bear with me here.
I think it's Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, of course it is. A big one on Sunday, the late one. Chelsea, Manchester United, another huge game.
Yeah,
Jose,
very
back
big
to the bridge there, of course.
Yeah.
Where would you rate them right now? Where would you put them? I mean, are they a team that's just on the cusp of becoming something good once again, or are they still really trying to find their feet kind of in quicksand?
I think they're still trying to find their feet. I don't, you know, there's just too many sort of options there. I'm still not convinced that they've settled, you know, they've addressed their defensive issues, because that back three or four, whatever they play with at times is, I know, it's unconvincing to me. So it's, and Pogba, God bless him, and I'm not sort of taking anything away from him, but it's clear that he's still trying to figure things out there. And I don't think it's necessarily his fault due to a slow start. It's just because, A, I think he gets extra attention now because of the transfer fee, which is, you know, it's a bit unfair. And, you know, United is very much a team in transition and still trying to figure things out. So it's, you know, that's not an ideal situation for him.
He's the last person I'd be worried about, though. If I'm
oh, absolutely.
Fan. He'll be just fine.
Yeah.
He hasn't been horrible.
No.
And he hasn't obviously been a £100 million player, but I don't know what that is anyway.
Right.
But yeah, he'll be just fine. And there's so little criticism for Ibra. He scored goals, but mm-hmm. I mean, he was isolated against Liverpool.
He was.
When he's quiet, he's really quiet, and he hasn't been great for 90 minutes this season.
No.
Just that's kind of what he does. He pops up at the right time, but he seems, maybe it's because the transfer fee wasn't there, but he seems like Teflon Ibra, you know? Nothing sticks to him at all.
Yeah.
You know, no criticism whatsoever. All the other guys are getting nailed for it.
Yeah, it could be. It could be, which surprises me a little bit, just because, you know, considering all the sort of criticism that he received from the English press over the years, you know, because they didn't really, not that they didn't rate him, but they always kind of, again, looked at him like, yeah, he's doing it in Liga, he's doing it in Serie A, you know, but, well, you know, he's got to come to England to prove himself. So I'm a bit surprised that he's hasn't got more flack.
Yeah. Anything else you want to get to regarding the football world, or what's on the website coming up the next
day? Just, we're going to have, you know, big preview coverage of the weekend coming up, and I'll be at TFC on Sunday as they host the Chicago Fire, trying to nail down that second spot in the first round bye. I don't think they'll do it, but they seem to have squandered that chance with this current run of form. But
and if they do have to play that game, that'll be Wednesday?
It'll be next Wednesday or Thursday, right, at BMO Field.
And then so, Sunday will be the first round proper, right?
Right, yeah, which they'll be the home leg, and then they'll probably play, well, they will play New York City FC in the second round. So.
Right. Juicy.
Yeah, very,
very
juicy.
Juicy indeed. Yeah, it's almost like for a while there, they're getting a bit of press and people were kind of believing in this team. Once again, it's probably not a bad thing for Greg Vennie and company that, you know, people have kind of taken their eye off TFC a little bit. There's less, a little bit less pressure than there was maybe a month ago.
Yeah, because they've kind of...
they've slowed down.
Yeah, they've slowed down. They're winless in five. They've given up 8 goals. I don't think they're playing badly, but they're just not taking their chance as well, and they've dropped points, there's no question.
Win in Giovinco's absence, it should be noted, though.
Sure.
Much of that. Mocky Delgado got a new deal, by the way. Happy to see that.
Yeah, he's a good kid.
Good player, nice guy.
Good kid.
And he works hard when he gets a chance and plays in a variety of positions.
He does, yeah, and he's 21, and I think he's got a pretty big upside to him. So it was a smart piece of business that they were able to lock him up, and good that he got a nice little raise for himself.
Certainly is. All right, well, listen, that's the Soccer Central podcast. We are back on more Monday with Dobby, Dunlop, and myself. And don't forget, this weekend, Saturday on Sportsnet, kicking things off, Arsenal against Middlesbrough. And we have action throughout the weekend. Our thanks to Lloyd Barker. JMO, thank you very much. Jazzy behind the glass, filling in when no one thought he'd even be in the suite. But thank you.
Thanks, Jazz.
And he's not even listening right now, is he? I got a thumbs up. We're good.
There you go.
All right, I'm James Sharman. I hope you enjoyed that. And yeah, we'll chat to you real soon. Cheers, bless.